all feeding into rectangular metal ducts that disappeared into the ceiling. And a little farther along, set into the wall, was a pair of gray metal breaker boxes. Reacher ducked down to avoid the joists and made his way across to them. He opened the first one. A printed label inside said, House. The label in the second one said simply, Panel 2. A house this size doesn't need two panels, Reacher said. The second one must feed the bunker, when it's not running its own generator. He pointed to the master switch. Give me 3 minutes, then throw that. It should cut them off. Then they'll send someone to investigate. What if they don't? Sans said. What if their generator is working, or they have a battery backup, or the panel is for something else altogether? Then we wait for Walworks people. But we have nothing to lose by trying. Throw the switch, then wait for my text. After that, get clear. Find somewhere safe to wait. Reacher went back outside and walked across to the bunker. He stayed at ground level, looped around the stairwell, and stopped in a spot above the vertical threshold of the door where he would be invisible to anyone who came out. He took the SOCOM from his waistband, screwed the suppressor back into place, and waited. The clock in his head told him the 3 minutes were up. Nothing happened. Another minute passed, and another. Then Reacher heard the screech of metal on metal, followed by the slap of heavy footsteps on concrete. The back of a head appeared. It was bald, with little ears stuck on the sides like an afterthought. The guy from Moscow, who had tried to force Reacher into the trunk of the town car. Reacher waited until the guy got to the top of the steps, then raised his gun. Hey, Reacher called out. The guy stopped and turned around. Reacher moved closer, skirting the stairwell, keeping the gun leveled on his chest. The woman you call Natasha, Reacher said. You brought her here? The guy didn't reply. Describe the layout of the bunker. The guy stared back at Reacher, but didn't speak. Who is down there? How many? The guy was silent. You're out of time. Reacher nodded toward the town car. Open the trunk. The guy's mouth twisted into a smile, revealing more of his crooked, stained teeth. Think your vest will save you? Reacher raised his aim to the bridge of the guy's nose. Think again. Open the trunk. You're not going to shoot me, the guy said. His words were clear, but heavy with a Russian accent. The FBI has rules. True, Reacher said. He lowered the gun, about a foot. But I don't work for the FBI. Then he pulled the trigger. The bullet hit the Moscow guy dead in the center of his chest. It tore through the fabric of his shirt and slammed into a layer of Kevlar. The guy staggered back. Just one step. At that range, most people would have been knocked down. Maybe with broken ribs. Maybe with damaged organs. The mesh of polymer strands is too strong and too tight for the slug to tear through. But all its dissipated energy has to go somewhere. Reacher returned the gun to eye level. Last chance. The guy held up his hands, nodded, then slowly took his keys from his pants pocket. He fumbled, one-handed, trying to get his thumb lined up with the correct button on the remote. The key ring slipped through his fingers. It landed on the ground in front of him. He leaned down to retrieve it, grabbed a handful of dirt, whipped his arm up and hurled the dust and grit at Reacher's face. Reacher stepped back, avoiding the cloud. The guy flung another handful, then sprang forward. He was surprisingly fast for someone his size, and agile. His knee came up, his foot flicked out. It came around in a tight crescent, caught the extended barrel of the suppressor, tore the gun out of Reacher's hand, and sent it spinning away in a slow, looping, lazy arc. Reacher heard it rattle and clatter down the concrete steps. The guy glanced down at the hole in his shirt, at the pancaked remains of the bullet. He smiled, then launched a giant, scything roundhouse punch toward Reacher's head. Reacher sidestepped and ducked and crashed his elbow into the guy's side as he spun under his flailing arm. It was a pointless blow. No way was it going to bother the guy through his Kevlar vest. Pure muscle memory on Reacher's part. The guy whipped around and tried the same move again. Reacher stepped and spun and kept his elbow tucked in by his side this time. The guy locked his knees and bounced back and aimed a jab at Reacher's head. Reacher ducked and felt the breeze in his hair as the guy's giant fist zipped over his head. The vest denied Reacher a number of targets, so he focused on the guy's face. His nose was crushed and bent. It had obviously been broken in the past, maybe more than once, which revealed a vulnerability. Reacher darted forward. He feigned the windup for a roundhouse punch with his left arm and jabbed his right fist square into the guy's face. It was a beautiful blow, powerful, accurate. It rocked the guy's head way back, bending his neck and straining his ligaments. It would have put a regular person on his back, maybe kept him there. The Moscow guy just shook his head and straightened up. There was no sign of blood, no ragged breath sounds. So Reacher hit him twice more, with the same fist, in the same place, with every ounce of power he could muster. Then he pulled back to assess the damage he'd caused. There was no sign of damage. The Moscow guy was bouncing on the soles of his feet, grinning like he was having the time of his life. Then he sprang forward and launched punches with both fists at once. Reacher blocked one blow. He started to counter. Muscle memory again. A reaction to seeing the other guy's face and body completely unguarded. Then he recognized the danger, adjusted, went to parry the second blow, but was late, by a fraction of a second. The guy's fist flashed past Reacher's raised forearm and piled into his chest, just inside his left shoulder. The force spun him around and knocked him sideways. He went down on one knee and only just recovered before the guy followed up with a kick aimed at his gut. Reacher arched around it and crashed his right fist into the guy's temple. The guy staggered to his left, regained his balance, took four more steps, then reversed direction and came at Reacher, fast, aiming to charge into him, to knock him down. A schoolyard maneuver, brutally effective against the unwary, but not against someone with Reacher's experience. The guy was leading with his right shoulder. Reacher stepped to his left to place himself behind the guy as he passed, away from the danger of a right jab, or a left hook, or a forearm smash. Only the guy didn't pass. He jammed his right foot into the ground, locked his knee, pushed back, spun around counterclockwise, and slammed his left elbow flat across Reacher's chest. The force lifted Reacher off his feet, and this time he went down on his back. His head hit the ground. The air left his lungs. The Moscow guy loomed over him, lifted his right foot, held it high, ready to stamp down on Reacher's head, or throat, or gut, or groin. Whichever he picked, that would be the end, or the beginning of the end. And then the guy hesitated. Maybe he was spoiled for options. Maybe he wanted to make his victim sweat. But whatever the reason, it gave Reacher time to flip over onto his front, push down with his hands, pull his knees forward, plant his feet flat on the ground, and spring up, locking his legs and driving the top of his head into the base of the guy's jaw just where it narrowed under his chin. The guy went up and back and down and wound up sprawling and winded in the dirt, with Reacher looming over him. And Reacher did not hesitate. He was a street fighter at heart, a brawler, a savage. He knew the first rule. When you get your guy down, you finish him. Right there, right then. So he kicked the guy in the head as hard as he could. Then he kicked him again, and again. And then he knelt on his chest and punched him in the throat with all his weight and strength. Reacher stood back to survey the damage. He took a moment to get his breath back. Then he dragged the guy's body over to the town car. He searched his pockets for spare ammunition for the SOCOM. He didn't find any, so he used the remote to pop the trunk, heaved the guy up, and folded him inside. Then he opened the driver's door, leaned in, and wrenched the rearview mirror off the windshield, texted Sands, "Switch on," and started back toward the steps. He was on the third one down when his phone rang. It was Walwork. "News," he said, "from Oak Ridge. You were right about Klosterman having a kid who works there. But not a son, a daughter, Diane. And she doesn't go by Matusak. She's married. She uses her husband's name, Smith. The most common last name in America. Useful thing for a spy, right? Anyway, we're watching her now. First clear chance we'll grab her. She could be a useful bargaining chip. Reacher ended the call and continued down the steps. He retrieved the SOCOM, paused at the bottom, pushed the heavy door, and went through. The space was tiny and low, like a cubicle in a clothing store fitting room. Maybe adequate for normal-sized people, but very tight for Reacher. The floor and walls were made of concrete. The ceiling was lined with massive steel joists. Ahead was another door, also gray, with a giant wheel in the center in place of a lock. Reacher pulled, and the door opened. He went through into another space, slightly larger but still uncomfortable. Steel joists continued to support the ceiling. The walls were plain concrete, and there was a hatch set into the floor. Reacher had expected something like this, some kind of vertical shaft. If someone was waiting at the bottom with a weapon, it would be game over. But there was no way around it. If he was going to find Fisher, he would have to go down. Reacher held the SOCOM in his right hand and lifted the hatch with his left. He swung it all the way open, then took out the mirror he'd removed from the town car. He held it over the opening and angled it so he could look down. The shaft was cylindrical. It was lined with curved concrete sections, precisely lined up. No gaps, no cracks. The drop was 20 feet deep. There were D-shaped metal staples set into the wall to act as rungs. Four dim lights in wire cages, and no sign of anyone lurking at the base. Reacher put the mirror back in his pocket and tucked the SOCOM into his waistband. He figured the space lower down would be limited, likely with solid walls. A bad environment for ricochets. The area at the bottom of the shaft was twice the width of that at the top. There was another hatch set into the floor to the right, presumably leading to a lower level, and a gray metal door in the wall ahead of him. He opened it a crack and used his mirror to look through. It led to a corridor. There were more gray surfaces, lots of precise right angles, but no people. Reacher opened the door the rest of the way and stepped through. Fisher was struggling to focus. Her head felt like it was filled with sand. She was suddenly cold, wet, conscious of being upright, but not exactly standing. Her arms were above her head. She tried to bring them down, couldn't. Realized she was hanging from them. Her shoulders started to protest. There was pain in her wrists. Something was biting into them, something metal, and her feet were bare. Only her toes were on the floor. The surface felt rough beneath them. She shook her head, and a guy swam into her view. He was old. He had white hair, masses of it, all curly and wild. He put something down, a bucket. He reached to his side, to a metal table. There were things lined up on it, tools with blades and jaws. He picked one up, like a scissors, only larger, maybe sharper. He held it up in his right hand, in front of her face, and pulled the hem of her shirt toward him with his left. "Now then, my dear," he said, "let's get you out of these damp clothes." Reacher could see another door straight ahead at the far end of the corridor, three doors on the left and two on the right. He opened the first door on the left. It led to a bedroom. It was small, utilitarian. There was a metal cupboard against one wall, and a metal-framed cot. No other furniture. No home comforts of any kind. The first door on the right opened onto a bathroom. It was communal, with urinals and stalls and sinks, stainless steel and plain white porcelain, white tile on the floor. The second door on the left led to another bedroom. It was identical to the first. A metal cupboard, a metal cot. No other furniture. The second door on the right was for a dormitory. There were three double bunk beds. They had metal frames with thin striped mattresses, and a row of cheap wooden footlockers was lined up next to them. The last door on the left opened onto the kitchen. There were refrigerators and freezers, cabinets and countertops, tables and chairs, two sinks, and a painting on the wall of a window with billowing drapes and a view of trees and flowers and grass. The final door led to a square room. It was as big as all the others combined, There was a dining area to the right, with a pale wooden table and 8 chairs. A sitting area to the left, with 2 couches and 2 armchairs. Bookcases lined the walls, some full, some empty. Some holding stacks of board games, some with stacks of magazines. But there were no people, and no sign of Fisher, which is what Reacher had been afraid of. It meant he would have to go down to the lower level. Fisher's mental fog was starting to lift. Her head still ached, but she was able to make better sense of her surroundings. She only had on underwear, she realized. She was starting to shiver. Her arms were above her head because her wrists were manacled and attached to a chain that ran through a metal ring in the center of the ceiling. The room she was in was about 10 feet by 15. There was 1 door, which was ajar. The walls were made of cinder block, which had been painted. Originally white, but now yellowing, except for lots of patches that were covered with brownish splatters and stains. The floor was concrete. There were the stubs of thick bolts sticking up from apparently random spots. Fisher guessed that some kind of heavy machinery had once been anchored there. Aside from her, there were 5 people in the room. The old guy with the white hair, holding the pair of shears he'd used to cut off her clothes. The 3 remaining members of her crew. And a woman she didn't recognize. She was exceptionally thin, wearing a black dress with a white apron like some kind of uniform, and her blonde hair was knotted on top of her head. Fisher's shredded clothes were on the floor at her feet. There was a bucket, which she guessed the guy had used to bring the water he'd thrown on her. And now she saw the metal table had 2 levels. Her eyes were drawn to a device on the lower shelf. It was made of polished wood with an angled front and a dial, like an old-fashioned radio. A cable snaked from its back to an outlet on the wall. And it had 2 other wires. They were coiled up. One ended with a wad of some kind of fuzzy metal. The other had an insulated handle with 2 brass spuds sticking out of its far end. "I see you're admiring my device," the old man said. "It's vintage, from Moscow. It belonged to my mother. She was an expert operator, by all accounts. Maybe we'll use it today. These people have probably never seen anything like it in action. High voltage, low current. That's the secret. So it can cause more pain, for longer. The steel wool goes up inside. Well, you can probably guess. And the probe goes wherever I like." Reacher went back through the door leading to the foyer. He raised the hatch in the floor and used his mirror to look inside. The shaft went down another 20 feet. Reacher didn't like that. He was too far below ground already. The skin on the back of his neck started to prickle. There was a reason his ancestors told tales of trolls lurking beneath bridges and dragons living in caves. Those places were dark, cramped, unnatural. People shouldn't go in them. There were 5 rooms on the lower level, 2 on the left, 2 on the right, and 1 at the end of the corridor. There were signs on the doors, air purification and HVAC on the left, switchboard and generator on the right, and water purification on its own. Reacher didn't need to search these rooms 1 by 1. The doors to 4 of them were closed. Only 1 was open. The generator room. Just a crack. But enough for Reacher to hear a voice. Someone he recognized. Klosterman was sliding his shears up between Fisher's breasts. He caught the thin strip of her bra between the blades, centered them on the little decorative bow, and started to squeeze the handles. "This is mainly for my amusement, as I already know all about you, Natasha. Or should I call you Margaret?" he said. "But I do have 1 question. The Drifter. How do I find him?"
"Just turn around," Reacher said from the doorway.
5 people turned. 2 backed away toward the far wall, Klosterman and his housekeeper. 3 drew their weapons, the Russian agents. They were to Reacher's right, about halfway into the room, in a straight line, shoulders almost touching. The men on the outside, the woman sandwiched between them. Reacher stepped toward them. They raised their guns.
Reacher raised his hands, slowly, until they were at face height, palms out, fingers spread. "Here's how I see things," Reacher said. "You're all professionals, here to do a job. Nothing personal. So if you put your guns down, lie on the floor, and put your hands behind your heads, I won't kill you. I'll hand you over to the authorities. They'll ask you a bunch of dumb questions, give you crappy food for a few months, and then trade you for the next Americans who get caught in your country. You'll likely be home by the end of the year. What do you say?" None of the Russians responded. "This is a limited time offer," Reacher said. "It expires in 3 seconds. Ready? 3, 2. Reacher shot both hands forward, his fingers closing into fists as they moved, and punched both the men in their throats. They dropped their guns and fell down backward, clutching their necks and desperately trying to suck air in through their crushed larynxes. Then he drove his right knee up into the woman's abdomen. She folded forward, gasping, and he smashed his right elbow down into her neck where her spine joined her skull. She collapsed like a switch had been thrown and landed at Reacher's feet. Not bad, Reacher thought. Quick, effective, though not quite symmetrical. No points for style. The housekeeper zipped forward. Reacher hardly saw her leg move, but he felt the side of her foot when it hit his cheek. He lunged for her, but she danced back toward the corner, twisting and weaving too fast for him to grab. He moved toward her, crowding her, aiming to trap her in the corner and nullify her speed. She dodged to the side, pulling something from her hair as she moved. A pin. More like a blade. 6 inches long. Slender. Razor sharp. She slashed at Reacher as she passed, caught him on the chest, sliced his shirt, and his skin. Not too deep, but enough to draw blood. She slashed the opposite way, missed, and ran for the door. Reacher followed, looked down the corridor, saw she was already halfway to the end. He took the SOCOM from his waistband, aimed, and fired 3 shots, going for her center mass. But hitting the end wall high and left, the suppressor must have gotten bent when the gun tumbled down the steps. His instinctive side screamed, "Chase her." His rational side said, "She's too fast. Forget her. She's gone." Reacher went back into the room and found Klosterman just inside the door. He kicked him in the balls. Klosterman doubled over and went down on all fours, puking and gasping and moaning. Reacher crossed to Fisher. He stretched up and unfastened her manacles. Fisher steadied herself for a moment with a hand on Reacher's chest. Then she wrapped her arms around herself. "I'm freezing," she said. "I'm dizzy." Reacher stepped back over to the Russian woman's body, hauled it into a sitting position, and wrestled its shirt over its head. He handed it to Fisher, then went to work removing the dead woman's boots, socks, and pants. He left Fisher to finish getting dressed, walked across to Klosterman, and helped him into a sitting position against the wall. "I want you to tell me 2 things, Reacher said. "I've seen how you get information from people. Do I need to get busy with your toolkit? Hang you from the ceiling? Fire up your electric toy?"
"No."
Klosterman's voice was barely louder than a whisper. "Good. Now these are things I already know, but I want to hear you say them. First, Tony Garza, the journalist. You killed her."
"Yes."
"And tortured her." Klosterman nodded. "And Marty, the guy who drove me."
"He's dead."
"You killed him too?"
"No. I had them do it."
Klosterman gestured toward the Russians' bodies. "Okay. Thank you for being honest. And while the spirit of sharing is upon us, I have a couple of things to tell you. For a start, your plan to use Fisher to feed false information to the FBI, it failed."
"I don't know what you're talking about."
"All it did was alert them to the real agent." Klosterman stiffened. "They're going to arrest her real soon."
"I don't believe you."
"It's true. Otherwise, how would I know her name? Diane Smith. Diane Klosterman, before she got married." Klosterman didn't react. He sat perfectly still. For 10 seconds. 15. Then he lunged for his ankle, His fingers closed around the grip of a little pearl-handled .22. But he never got it out of its holster, because Reacher grabbed a handful of his wild hair, pulled his head forward, and smashed it back into the wall. Just once. That was all it took. Reacher took two phones from Klosterman's pockets, a plain vanilla burner, and one with all kinds of extra buttons and icons. He figured someone at the FBI would be interested in that one, so he handed it to Fisher. Then he led the way out of the room, down the corridor, and through the door to the lobby. Fisher took a step toward the ladder, then sank down into a crouch.
"I'm not feeling good," she said. "Whatever that drug was they used, it's messed me up. I don't think I can climb."
"I'm not leaving you down here," Reacher said. "That's for damn sure." He hoisted her over his shoulder, climbed to the next level, and squeezed through the hatch. "See? No problem. One more flight, and we're home free." Reacher climbed the next five rungs. Then he stopped. Something was wrong up at the top of the ladder. It was too dark. He continued to the space at the top, gently lowered Fisher down and rested her against the wall, closed his eyes, and tried the door. It didn't move, not even a fraction of an inch. Reacher was trapped, underground, in a small space. The only thing since childhood that could give him nightmares. His worst fear. The only thing he couldn't fight.
"I don't get it," Fisher said. "Why is there no handle?"
"It's on the other side," Reacher said. He was focused on continuing to breathe. "It's a kind of airlock, with two doors." He paused. "They should never be open at once. So the handles are on the same side. Then one guy can control them both."
"So someone locked it from the other side? Who?"
"My money's on Klosterman's housekeeper." Reacher pressed his back against the door and slid down until he was sitting on the ground. The skin between his shoulder blades was beginning to prickle. He was starting to sweat.
"The skinny woman? Who ran? But you shot her. I heard it." "No. Wait."
Fisher shook her head, trying to clear the lingering fog. She pressed her fingers against her temples.
"Her body wasn't in the corridor. She got away?"
Reacher shrugged. "The way she fought," Fisher said. "The way they let her take part in the torture. She's not just a housekeeper. She's one of them. She'll report what happened. The Russians will pull their agent. We've got to warn Walwerk." "He's on his way," Reacher said. "He should be. I told him you were here."
"We can't wait. We have to warn him now."
Reacher took out his phone. It had no signal. They were near the surface, but behind too much concrete, too much steel. The same things that were keeping them in were keeping the radio waves out. Reacher tried Klosterman's phones. Neither of those could connect either.
"Okay," Fisher said. "Then we have to stop her."
"How?" Reacher said. "This door is the only way out. It's impossible to open."
"There must be another way. Where the utilities come in. Some kind of pipe or duct."
Reacher shook his head. "These places are self-contained. The water is processed and recirculated. Same with the air."
"What about power? The generator? It's gone now. But there must have been one. This place was built, when? The 1950s?
Reacher nodded.
"What kind of generators did they have back then?" Fisher said.
"Diesel, probably," Reacher said. "And diesel engines require air to run, which would have to come from outside.
Come on."
Fisher struggled to her feet. "Back to the generator room. We'll start looking in there." Reacher looked at the mouth of the shaft. It was the last place in the world he wanted to go. But where he was, trapped behind that massive door, was the last place in the world he wanted to stay. And he had the Russian agent to think about. Klosterman's daughter. Maybe with her hands already on the sentinel. Maybe already ordered to disappear. Reacher knew Sands would raise the alarm when she didn't hear from him. Walwerk should be on his way too. But how long would help take to arrive?
"I'll go."
Reacher handed the SOCOM to Fisher. Someone might come. They might open the door. If they do, Make sure they don't close it again. Reacher climbed down the first ladder, one rung at a time, nice and slow and calm. Then the second ladder. Then he walked down the corridor to the generator room, went in, glanced at the bodies on the floor, and turned his attention to the ceiling. He surveyed every inch. There was nothing that looked like it could have been a vent or an air supply. He moved down to the walls. There were two filled-in circles that could have been pipes, in which case they were doomed. They were only 9 inches across, which left the two square panels. Reacher walked over and knocked on one. It sounded solid. He tried the second. It was hollow. He tried to tear it off, but couldn't get any kind of purchase. It had been painted around, sealing up any gap, not even leaving enough space to jam his fingernails into. He went to the metal table, scanned the top level, the line of ghastly tools, found a chisel and a hammer. Tried not to think about why Klosterman had wanted them, or what he'd used them for. Reacher took them back to the panel. He started at the top left corner and hammered the tip of the chisel between the wood and the wall. He worked his way all around the perimeter, then knocked the chisel in farther, 3 inches, 4, and started to lever the handle away from the wall. He felt the panel move. He kept heaving until the gap grew larger, and finally he was able to wrench the wood away altogether. It had covered a square hole in the wall, 3 feet by 3. The space also went back 3 feet, forming a cube. Reacher felt inside. The floor was solid, so were the walls. But the top wasn't. A circular shaft rose out of it, 3 feet in diameter. He tried to look up inside it, but it was pitch dark. Reacher crawled into the space, then stretched his arms above his head, hunched his shoulders, and clawed his way upright. Nothing obstructed him. He felt the sides of the shaft. They were cold and smooth. Stainless steel, he thought. He moved his hands down and found a rib, 1 inch deep, the join between sections of steel liner. Not much, but something. He stretched up and found another, 3 feet above the first, like tiny ladder rungs, leading into a tight, dark space. Maybe to the surface. Maybe to oblivion. Only one way to find out. Reacher started to climb. He pulled himself up to the next rib, found the one below with his feet, pressed his back into the metal surface behind him, took a breath, pulled up to the next rib, took another breath. He was sweating. He pulled himself up. His skin was still prickling. Then the shaft started to get narrower. It was squeezing in, gripping him. He was going to get jammed. It was like the black holes in space he'd read about. Matter got sucked in, crushed, and it never got back out. No, that wasn't true. His mind was playing tricks. He forced himself to keep going. He made it to the 18th rib, the 19th. He stretched up, and his fingertips touched something. It was solid, rough. Wood, he thought. He was at the top, but something was covering the exit. Reacher pressed his hands against it, tucked his head into his chest, and shifted his feet up one more rib, uncurled his back until his neck and shoulders were in contact, started to push, and his left foot slipped. He fell sideways. His head hit the metal lining of the shaft, disorienting him in the dark. He scrabbled with his hands, pushed sideways, stabilized himself, got his bearings, caught his breath, and tried again. He hunched over, pressed up with his shoulders and neck, slowly built the pressure, and felt the thing above him move, very slightly. He pushed harder. It gave a little more. He wriggled and twisted and pushed and managed to slide it to the side. 1 inch, 2 inches, enough to see light, to breathe fresh air. He pushed harder, twisted farther, kept going until he'd made a space wide enough to climb through. Then he hauled himself out and collapsed on the rough, scrubby grass, covered in sweat, staring up at the sky. Reacher sat and pulled his phone out of his pocket. It vibrated in his hand, and 2 words appeared on its screen. New message. He hit the button to make the message play and lifted the phone to his ear. It was from Walwork, with news from Oak Ridge. As terse as ever. He said Klosterman's daughter had tried to run. The FBI had stopped her. But she wasn't talking. Not yet. Reacher put the phone away and hauled himself to his feet. He took a quick look at the top of the shaft. A neat, square concrete collar had been built around it. The stubs of sturdy bolts were sticking out, so he figured there had originally been some kind of baffle fixed over the entrance to guard against whatever kind of nuclear debris the Cold Warriors were worried about. That had probably been removed when the generator was taken out of service. Dismantled parts may even have been hauled up the shaft. It would have been easier than carrying them up the ladders, that was for sure. And when the project was done, someone just tossed a board over the hole. Over time, the board got covered with dirt, and the dirt grew scrappy grass like the rest of the field, which is why nothing showed up on the satellite photo. Reacher hustled across to the steps. He got all the way down and saw someone beyond the first door, hunched over, with her ear to the second. It was Klosterman's housekeeper, back from raising the alarm, no doubt wondering about the fate of her comrades. "You're wasting your time." Reacher stepped through the doorway. "They're all dead. Your agent's been caught. So do the smart thing. Give up." The housekeeper turned around, her mouth gaped open, her eyes stretched wide. She pressed herself back and at the same time she pulled the pin from her hair. Reacher moved closer and she jabbed at him, slashing back and forth. He swatted her arm aside, knocking the pin from her grip. Then he grabbed her by the neck with his left hand, turned the wheel with his right, and opened the door. He waited for Fisher to come out and get to the top of the steps. Then he shoved the housekeeper through the doorway. Maybe she fell down the shaft. Maybe she didn't. Reacher didn't feel the need to check. He just closed the door and spun the wheel. Reacher and Fisher sat on the hood of the red Chevy and waited for Sands to arrive. She appeared after 3 minutes, pulling up in the same spot she'd used earlier. She got out, hugged Fisher, helped her into the passenger seat, then came back to talk to Reacher. "I should take Agent Fisher to the hospital," she said. "You coming?" "No," Reacher said. "There's something I have to do here." "And after that? Will I see you again?" Reacher said nothing. "If our paths don't cross, I wish you luck, Reacher." "Good luck to you too," Reacher said. "I hope Cerberus pays off for you. I hope you get your boat." "Thanks. I hope you get whatever it is you need too." Sans came closer. She stood on tiptoes and kissed Reacher's cheek. Then she turned toward the car. "Sarah." Reacher took his phone out of his pocket and handed it to her. "Give this to Rusty for me. I don't need it anymore." Chapter 29. It was the calm before the storm, Reacher thought. The gate had clanked shut behind Sands and Fisher, leaving the place quiet and peaceful. But it wouldn't stay that way for long. Swarms of FBI agents would soon race in to tear the house apart. And another crew would be sent underground, to the bunker, to bring up the bodies. And with them would come questions, the kind Reacher didn't want to be around to answer, so he knew he would have to hurry. Reacher took out Klosterman's burner phone. It was a basic model, an old design, presumably cheap, which made sense, given it had been bought with no long-term future in mind. It meant there was no fingerprint ID. No facial recognition, just an old-school pin. 4 digits, 10,000 permutations. No time to try them all. So Reacher scooped up some dirt, ground it into dust, sprinkled a little over the keys, blew the excess away, held the phone sideways to the light, and found that none had stuck. He tried again with a little more dirt. None stuck. The technique gave him no help this time. But it had told him something at the gate. Klosterman had used 0420, Adolf Hitler's birthday, a subtle reinforcement for the people he wanted to convince he was a Nazi, which he wasn't. But his choice did reveal a possible affinity with dates. So what would Klosterman pick? The opposite of a Nazi? Reacher tried 0505 for Karl Marx. The phone buzzed angrily and refused to unlock. He tried 0422 for Lenin. The phone refused to unlock. He tried 1107 for Trotsky. The phone refused. Then Reacher refined his thinking. Klosterman had been born in 1950. He grew up during the height of the Cold War. His parents were Soviet agents. His uncles were Soviet agents. Who, from that era, could inspire lifelong loyalty? Reacher entered 1218, Joseph Stalin's birthday. The phone unlocked. Reacher worked his way through the phone's menus until he found a list of received calls. There were four different numbers. Three of them each appeared only once, the other four times. Reacher started with it. He highlighted it and hit call. It was answered after three rings. Yes? It was a man's voice. Reacher was fairly sure he recognized it. He thought he heard a door close in the background as well. A word to the wise, Reacher said. Henry Klosterman is dead. FBI agents are on their way to search his house. ETA, 20 minutes. Reacher hung up and started walking toward the house. He crossed the porch, went inside, crunched over the pieces of shattered doorframe, made his way down the corridor, past the photographs, and continued all the way to the end. He knew the last door on the right was the living room, which gave him three to pick from. He tried the last on the left, and found what he was looking for straight away. Klosterman's study. The room was square with windows on two sides. There was a desk in front of the one to the right, facing into the room. It was big and oppressive, made of polished mahogany, with a green leather inlay on top. Behind it was a green leather captain's chair with a row of heavy brass studs around its edge. There was a bookcase next to the door, and a line of waist-high file cabinets against the fourth wall. Hanging above them was a framed portrait in oils. It was of Stalin. He was wearing his World War II military uniform. Reacher took it down. There was a different image on its other side. Adolf Hitler. Reacher replaced the picture with the Nazi leader facing out. Reacher checked the drawers in the desk and the cabinets. All were locked. He considered breaking in, but decided against it. He would have been interested in any historical artifacts unique to Klosterman's life and times. But the FBI was welcome to the job of sifting through papers and documents. He looked behind the books on the shelf out of pure habit, found nothing, then settled in next to the bookcase to wait. 5 minutes passed in silence. Then Reacher heard footsteps in the corridor. Someone medium weight, he thought, wearing sturdy shoes. Trying to be discreet, but also in a hurry. The sound came closer. It paused outside the door. The handle turned. The door began to swing. Slowly. Its leading edge moved about a foot, then stopped. The muzzle of a gun appeared in the gap. A whole barrel came into view. It belonged to a revolver, a Smith & Wesson Model 60, the first stainless steel revolver made anywhere in the world, designed to avoid the danger of corrosion when carried close to the body. Not police issue. The hand holding it became visible, followed by a wrist, protruding from the cuff of a white shirt beneath a gray suit coat sleeve. Reacher kicked the door. It slammed shut, crushing the wrist. The guy screamed. He dropped the gun, pulled his hand free, and jumped back. Reacher jerked the door all the way open and saw Detective Goodyear cowering against the far wall, clutching his forearm. Reacher stepped into the corridor, grabbed Goodyear by the lapels, dragged him into the study, and flung him headfirst into the wall beneath the window. Then he leaned on the edge of the desk and waited for the guy to roll over and pull himself into a half-sitting position. "I guess you've answered one question," Reacher said, "the one I asked you at the courthouse when we first met, about why you were so desperate to sweep Rutherford's attempted kidnapping under the rug." Goodyear didn't respond. "That means there's one question left," Reacher said. "Why were you helping Klosterman? Money? Blackmail? What?" "Principle," Goodyear spat back. Mr. Klosterman was working to save our country, our race. I was proud to help him.
Stand up. Goodyear didn't move.
Reacher pushed away from the desk.
Goodyear hauled himself to his feet.
Take off your jacket, Reacher said. Goodyear slipped his arms out of his sleeves and dropped the coat.
Open your shirt.
Goodyear undid his buttons one by one, starting at the top, working all the way to his waist.
All the way, Reacher said.
Goodyear slowly pulled the sides of the shirt apart.
Reacher looked at his chest,
at the left side, where there was a tattoo of an eagle with a swastika.
You might have heard that I met some of your so-called brothers the other night, Reacher said. They all resigned from your little band, with orders to explain that anyone who didn't would get their house burned down, with them inside.
No, Goodyear said, don't do that, please. I'll resign.
You will, but not just yet. Your buddies told me Klosterman was planning to recreate Hitler's Cathedral of Light. They were too stupid to understand what that was. I'm hoping you have a better grasp of history.
You're damn right I do.
I helped Mr. Klosterman with every stage of the planning.
So you know about bringing people in from all the other states?
Damn right.
So you have contacts with similar sad-ass groups in other places.
You can stop right there. I'll go to jail before I betray my brothers.
Refuse, and jail will be the least of your worries. But let me ask you one thing about your cause. You shared it with Klosterman.
Correct.
Henry Klosterman was your brother.
Goodyear nodded.
He wasn't your brother, Reacher said. He was a Russian agent. He was playing you for a fool, using you every step of the way. I bet he laughed himself to sleep every night, thinking about how dumb you are.
Nice try, Reacher, but I'll never believe that.
That picture. Reacher pointed at the wall above the file cabinets. Was it always up when you came here?
Goodyear stood and threw out a sharp salute. He winced as he tried to straighten his hand.
Always.
Take it down. See what's on the other side.
Goodyear stayed where he was.
Touching it would be sacrilege.
I'll do it then. Reacher stepped forward, but Goodyear darted in front of him.
No, Goodyear said. If anyone's going to, it should be me.
Goodyear paused in front of the picture, as if saying a prayer. Then he stretched out and took hold of it. He used both hands, one on each side of the frame, lifted it down, paused again, and turned it over.
You know who that is, right? Reacher said. Klosterman's true idol.
Henry Klosterman dedicated his entire life to destroying everything you believe in, and he tricked you into helping him. The journalist who was murdered, Tony Garza. Klosterman killed her because she was going to expose him.
Only you buried the investigation because he told you to. You helped him get away with it.
Goodyear shook his head.
I don't believe you.
Doesn't matter if you believe me or not, Reacher said. The FBI will explain it to you. I wasn't lying when I told you the agents are on their way. You can stay and help them round up the other groups, which would be doing your brothers a favor, honestly. It would stop anyone with a double-digit IQ being able to exploit them. Or if you don't like that idea, we can go to your house.
Reacher pulled a cigarette lighter out of his pocket. We can pick up some gas on the way.
Goodyear sank back down onto the floor.
No, I'll stay.
Take out your cuffs, Reacher said. Goodyear pulled them from a leather pouch on his belt.
Secure yourself to the file cabinet, to the drawer handle.
Goodyear did what he was told.
Okay, Reacher said. Two last things before I go. First, he took the painting and smashed it over Goodyear's head, leaving the frame hanging like a necklace.
Then Reacher punched Goodyear in the face. Normally, he would have used his left hand. Maybe dialed back the power a little, too. but making an exception seemed the right thing to do. Reacher left Klosterman's burner phone on his desk. There were four numbers in its call log. Goodyear's, which was accounted for. Marty's, which was a dead end. Literally. But that still left two for the FBI to track down. Two more crooked cops, maybe. Or two more suitcase carriers. Whatever they turned out to be, they needed to be stopped. He checked that Goodyear was breathing, then made his way out of the house and across to the red Chevy. He figured he would drive to the truck stop, leave the car in a parking lot, walk over to the gas station, to the truck side, and go wherever the first driver willing to take him was heading. He pulled up to the gate, waited for it to slide to the side, drove through, and stopped dead. A car had pulled in front of him, from out of nowhere, it seemed. Certainly not the road ahead. It must have been up on the grass verge, parallel to the wall. Reacher waited for the car to move. It was small. A late model Honda Civic. A woman was driving. She was wearing plain clothes, which is why it took Reacher a moment to recognize her. It was Officer Rule. Rule recognized Reacher at the same moment. She climbed out of the Honda and walked around to Reacher's door. He rolled down his window. "Reacher," Rule said. "What are you doing here?"
"Leaving," Reacher said. "In fact, I was never here. You?"
Rule was silent for a moment, as if she was trying to decide whether to answer. "I followed someone here."
"Detective Goodyear?" Rule nodded.
"Why?" Reacher said. "I figured something weird was going on. Something wrong."
"There was. How did you know?"
Rule shrugged. "Call it a cop's instinct.
I saw Goodyear take a call on a cell phone, then hurry into his office. Only it wasn't his regular phone. We've all had to use our own while the department phones have been down, and I know he has an iPhone, the latest kind. But several times now he's used this other one. It's old. And he's often seemed kind of furtive. I've always ignored it before. Then I thought, this is it. I have to know what his deal is."
"This was at the courthouse, where he took the call."
"Right. So why aren't you in uniform? And how come you're using your personal vehicle?"
"I was at the courthouse to hand in my notice. I quit. I'm sick of the place. I mean, think about it. You're a stranger, drifting through town. And you cared more about stopping crime here than our detective. You've already helped me more than anyone in the department ever did. I've had enough. It's time for a fresh start somewhere else."
"Your letter. Will anyone have read it yet?"
"I doubt it. Why?"
"You might want to get it back."
"Why would I want to do that?"
"The town has a vacancy for a new detective.
We only have one detective position, and it's taken."
"Not anymore. Goodyear just resigned."
"Are you serious?"
"Why?"
"Call it a personal crisis.
So he'll have to be replaced. They could bring someone in from the outside, I guess. But someone local would be better. Someone who cares about the town. Who has a string of recent arrests to her name. You know anyone like that?"
Rule thought for a moment. "Time for me to get back to the courthouse. Make that letter disappear."
She got halfway around the hood of her car, then turned back to Reacher.
"What about you? Where are you going?"
"I have no particular place in mind."
"How about my place?
You know where it is.
It's Friday evening. We could get some carry out. I have some beer, some wine."
"What about your neighbors? They would be bound to see me."
"Screw them. What are they going to do? Mess with the town's soon-to-be only detective?"
Chapter 30 Rusty Rutherford emerged from his apartment on Monday morning, exactly 2 weeks after he got fired. He wasn't normally the type of guy who dawdled in his local coffee shop. He went to the same one every day, purely for the caffeine.
He didn't go in search of conversation. He wasn't interested in finding new company. He stood quietly in line, placed his order, collected his drink as soon as it was ready, and left. Even after the week he spent with Jack Reacher, it proved a difficult habit to break. The adjustment process wasn't made any easier by the response he received from the other patrons. Everyone was pleased to see him. He felt like a magnet with the right polarity. The surrounding customers crowded in closer than usual. By the time he reached the counter, he had exchanged kind words with a dozen other people, and he had seen how the barista dealt with the two men in front of him when they stepped up to order. She had slammed their cups on the counter, slopped coffee into the saucers, then slid them forward, spilling even more. But she smiled at Rusty when it was his turn and asked if he wanted his regular. "Houseplant, medium. No room for milk, right?" she said. "Right," Rusty said. "To go." "It's on the house," she said. "See you tomorrow." The same time Rusty Rutherford was leaving the coffee shop, Jack Reacher was standing at the side of the street. He was half a block from the town's only set of traffic lights, which were working perfectly. He watched Rutherford set off, heading east. Not hurrying, not dawdling, just drifting along in his own little bubble, following a familiar route, comfortable with his surroundings, heading home, where he belonged. A car drew up alongside Reacher and stopped. It was new and shiny and bland. A rental. Driven by the insurance guy Reacher had met the week before. He was still wearing his plain dark-colored suit. But he no longer seemed panic-stricken. More like he was on top of the world. "Need a ride?" the guy said. "Where are you going?" Reacher said.
"Nashville. Meeting at the office. Giving a presentation about how I negotiated the ransom down 40% and still got the town systems back up and running, all apart from some archive thing, but whatever. History. Who cares?"
Reacher thought for a moment. He had just left Nashville, and he had a rule. Never go back. It rarely ends well. But he had been making a few exceptions recently. They had all worked out okay. And if he made another one now, he could go to a club, catch a band, make sure they got paid.
This is Scott Brick. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Sentinel, a Jack Reacher novel by Lee Child and Andrew Child. This program was directed by Christina Rooney, executive producer Kelly Gilday, edited by BookTrack. Text copyright 2020 by Lee Child and Andrew Child. Production copyright 2020, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.